my babies. Welcome to Titular Characters. In this issue, we're featuring Abigail Jill Harding, a young English illustrator and comic book artist from Yorkshire, whose first professional work in comics appeared in Elephant Men number 72. Abigail graduated from York College with a BA honors in 3D art and animation in 2015, but continued to concentrate on her illustration work. Abigail has been showcasing her mixed media skills at the yearly Leeds Comics Art Festival, Thought Bubble. Since then, she has done cover work for Titan Comics. And today, babies, she's here, ready to talk about comics, art, life, and quality tea. How are you, Abigail?
I'm okay, thank you, Eva. Thank you for having me today.
I wanted to thank you for being on our humble little podcast. It is an honor to have you on our show.
I feel it's an honor to be able to be on this podcast, to be honest. It's lovely. You always got to love it. Love the humble you. Ones.
So you are a comic book artist. You've worked on some really cool stuff. Are you working on anything exciting right now?
I'm working on a little short story that ties into Ask for Mercy about two of our particular characters. It involves forests and ghosts and a lot of spooky stuff going on. It's a very nice one, to be honest. I'm rather enjoying drawing it. It's quite it's a nice steady pace, and it's kind of got this it's almost a bit like a Hellboy story, where the panels kind of speak with like a subtleness, like all the scenery and things like that, and you have the characters kind of introduced steadily. I really like that sort of pacing. Yeah, it's very cold. It's a very cold story. Lots of snow.
That sounds awesome. So, what is your creative origin story? How did you get started with comics?
Oh gosh. Okay. So, I started reading them. Or perhaps started reading manga just as I was coming out of secondary school, so you could say about 15, 16. But it wasn't something that I was wanting to go in at the time. I found them much of a joy to read, because at the time I was looking to be a ceramic artist, sculptural ceramics. And so throughout college, I took on courses that would, I ended up doing 3D design. And so I did that. And I remember about roughly this time of year, was informed of a comic book shop in York. It's my local one called Travelling Man. And it's where I usually got all my comics from there on out. And I got to know the team. And it turned out that they knew quite a few people in the industry, of course. And obviously, it was a very interesting kind of domino effect how I ended up in comics, because I never wanted to be in comics in the first place. I sort of fell into it. So I graduated and I went to a Thought Bubble. I had a Thought Bubble festival that I went to in Leeds. It was a small one at the time. But I'd been going to that festival as a punter for a few years prior with a friend of mine from college. But I got to... Through Travelling Man, I got to know the manager and Ben, and he was thinking of writing some comics, and I had shown my work to them, and we ended up collaborating. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do this particular story that he wanted to do with me because we were going to feature in the Thought Bubble anthology. And what happened was, I got introduced to Sam Reed, who was his one of his writing friends at the time. We ended up doing a one-page short story, and this must have been about 2015. And it was a very personal one. It was a very personal story as well. But I felt very proud of it. It was a watercolour, kind of almost like art deco, art kind of self-contained story. It was probably the first bit of sequential art I did, even though it was all in one page. But it went into the anthology, and I remember being told that Richard Starkings wanted to see me at one of the signings that he was having at the comic book shop just prior to the festival, because he'd seen the page, because his company, Comic Craft, put the anthology together. And so I went down to see it, go and get my stuff signed, like all the anthology and some of the stuff that I had. And I got to meet him there. It was quite the experience, because he really liked the page, so much so that he asked me if I'd be taking a portfolio to the festival that weekend. And I said, yeah, I plan to. And he said, yeah, because I want to see your work. And so fast forward to the actual festival, and it was so ridiculous. I was cosplaying as Doctor Strange at the time, and I've actually cosplayed both for comic book interviews. I've cosplayed as Doctor Strange twice when it came to portfolio viewings, and I'm like, yeah, it was absolutely, I think back to it now and I'm like, oh my gosh. No, seriously, I had a Marvel portfolio viewing in, I think it was London Super Comic Con in 2016 as well. And I was like in front of Heather Antos and Cebulski, dressed as Doctor Strange, showing my artwork to them. I was like, oh God, looking back at it now. But yeah, I said,
it's beautiful though.
Well, at least it's memorable. I won't forget that. So what I was doing was I was going around Thought Bubble. I was showing my portfolio to some artists and some writers, and apparently word got round that I was showing my work. I went to Richard, and he really liked what he saw, and he said, would you like to do a cover for Elephant Men? And I was like, okay, because I wasn't sure that he was going to just like say that straight. Like, he was literally he just shot it out there, like, will you do it? And I'm like, okay. So I ended up doing the cover. And at this time, I actually was thinking of going into tattooing. So I was actually commuting all the way to Hull and back quite frequently, as well as doing the pub work. So there was a lot going on at the time. The tattooing stuff didn't work, but I've kept in touch with my mates who I've made friends with there, the lovely people. And I ended up being asked by Richard, after I'd sent him the final cover and all that, would you do the interiors? And I'm like, because I did tell him I'd never, like, apart from that one page, and I haven't actually had much experience with drawing comics at all. And he said, you know, that it's going to be all right, basically. So I was going to learn on the job. So the whole deal with layouts and bleeds and like page formats and dimensions, all of that stuff, I learned like literally as I was working on this comic issue. And I just remember it took me ages to do it because I was doing it all digitally. So I was still trying to find my kind of work method. I was still searching for an efficient way to work. So it was taking me ages to actually do these pages. And I'll be honest, Richard was very forgiving with the timeline, like deadlines and stuff, because I knew I was just so slow doing that. And it got to the point where I eventually handed all the pages in. And I just remember him turning around to me and saying, like, we need to bring the bleeds out a bit more. And I'm like, oh, gosh. So I spent, like, an entire night redoing the bleeds on all of the pages. And, I'm not having that ever again. Yeah, it was definitely something I learned, but it's something I'm not having to worry about anymore because Richard sent me a good a format to work with for like my layouts and like drawing traditionally that I just print out now, but I didn't have that at the time, and I was kind of learning as I went. Yeah.
So question for the non-technical folks. What is a bleed on a comic book page?
So how shall I describe this? So usually when you're constructing a comic book page, a lot of artists, myself included, would probably be using these guides. So you have like the safe box, which is the most inner box that runs, it's like the first, it's the deepest one in. So all of the artwork, like the important stuff, is in there. I usually have all my panels go up to that line. They don't go over that line. Because you've also got to take into account the gutter as well when, you know, the white framing that goes around the print of the actual page. So you have that second border where the cut is made. So that's the second one. And then the bleed is the excess. It's usually the most outer and the thinnest between the cut and the actual bleed border. It's the thinnest, but it gives a bit of leeway with the cutting and the print. But because like the comics I work on are digital, and also with the print on demand aspect with Comixology, the dimensions are slightly different with the most inner box I work with. So it's how shall I say, a few millimeters narrower to give way to the print-on-demand settings. That template helps a lot. But if you're an artist who kind of works on, like, specialist paper, like with watercolours, or has their own sort of technique with Eve, because some artists work beyond the typical kind of 11 by 17 A3s pages, or some will work much bigger than that. So you have to kind of blow the dimensions up more with the template. But I've noticed that everyone has their own method. There's no, everyone kind of works in their own ways, or they find a method that suits them most efficiently. So what I do is I draw my layouts digitally, but I have the template there ready to go to make sure that my arc doesn't, or the line work and stuff doesn't go beyond, or it doesn't go like out of where it shouldn't be with the borders. So it keeps it nice and clean. So when I go to print it out, and then I'll use a light board and I'll draw it on better quality paper. So like watercolor paper I usually use. And then I'll ink it. So I typically almost draw the page almost three times over thinking about it.
Wow.
Yeah. But but fortunately, I kind of work fast, I think. Well, Richard says I work reasonably fast, considering I work traditionally anyway. But I think a lot gives to the fact that I work digitally with the layout, so it gives me a bit of leeway with energy and stuff, and line work. I don't tend to go too much detail with the layouts, because it gives me a bit more to work with when I'm drawing it physically.
Well, one thing I noticed about your art on Ask for Mercy that I thought made it really striking is the way you do backgrounds and buildings and architecture. Your worlds just feel so lush and real. How do you get there?
Gosh, I'll be honest. Since doing comics, I've taken... it's made me more interested in things I weren't interested in much before, and start to like drawing stuff I didn't like drawing before. architecture being one thing, drawing hands is another. So the whole deal with the architecture, Richard was very encouraging of me kind of talking about or pitching what I would like to draw. And so there's a lot of gothicness in Ask for Mercy. There's a lot of building and architecture that any opportunity where I could, you know, something I'd really like to enjoy doing. And it's like with the second season, like a lot of it's set in Leeds and York, and they're familiar to me because they're literally just down the road, like it's home. And so drawing buildings is not easy for me, I'll be honest. It's something that I'm still learning of, trying to find an efficient way to draw, but making the style my own. I wanted to work more with backgrounds because it's nice to have the characters. It's not washed out. They're not kind of just two figures in some like desolate, barren land, you know. There's buildings around, they're in a street, or they're in a forest, or, you know, they're up near a window or on a ledge. Like, it's quite enjoyable to have the characters engage with these objects, these buildings. Like, I think I had in the first season, I had Ratmir, Budgie and Mercy and Casa on one of the rooftops in France. And it was kind of funny because I think I drew Budgie sitting on one of the dormer windows. You know, stuff like that, because it lends to how the characters in personality are. It's funny with Budgie because I turned him in. I remember because he's a shapeshifter, like he can turn into anything. So we had him turn into like the front visage of a building to disguise these SS soldiers from finding Mercy. And it was drawing the streets then, you know, looking at the research, looking at French architecture and stuff. I do like that sort of thing. I like researching, and because I'm a bit of a history sponge, I like learning and kind of learning and finding out something new. So, and that's the same with research. I'll spend like so much time just like typing into Google or going through some books and seeing stuff that visually is inspiring, or it's like, oh, that's something new. Oh, I've learned something new today, because that's what I've learned. It's like, I literally live by that. I have to learn something new every day. I have to. Like, it's something that it's kind of like a life ethic that I have. So it's nice to be able to just like send some stuff to Richard and he'll send some stuff back to me, that kind of collaborative stuff. It's like, I feel like I got better drawing architecture and the surroundings in season 3, definitely, because of course we had the streets and stuff in Leeds. But it was just really nice. I remember the hall, the city hall that I drew. It was like I think it was one of the first pages I drew for the season. And it was just such a joy. It was such a joy to draw, because I had a really awesome reference. I think it was the Thought Bubble previous, because it was the campus layout in the city centre. So we had the marquees dotted around the city centre, and the Ask for Mercy marquee was sitting just at the steps of the hall. I think it's the Corn Exchange. And so it was, you know, primary source referencing of that kind. Yeah, there's like some details you like when you're looking at architecture like that. There's so much detail, but it's the sort of thing I like, because it's so angular and detailed. It's like, I have my oohs and ahs about Bauhaus, but when it comes to interesting shapes, because that's how I see it, if it's pleasing to the eye, it's like, yeah. But my brain's just like, yeah, that's really nice. How am I going to do that in my drawing, you know, and adapting that? Because I have such a fine line sometimes with how I draw, but then sometimes I'd experiment to be a bit more free with like paintbrushes and stuff like that. So yeah, I do like to branch out when I can, especially when it comes to learning and kind of drawing new stuff that I didn't like drawing before. You start to kind of learn to appreciate it a little bit more.
The monsters in Ask for Mercy, yeah, are really interesting.
Yes.
I love them. How do you draw a good monster?
Oh man, it's right. Drawing good monsters. I like to play on kind of known fears of insects, spiders, even holes. I have a mild case of, I think it's trypophobia, where you have a fear of holes. I remember someone at college actually making a vessel completely made of, like, with this texture. Every time I walked by it, I kept shivering and I didn't understand why. It was very uncomfortable to look at. But, you know, stuff like that, I'd try and put into, I think, yeah, let's implement some of that sort of stuff into making monsters, or even aspects of them, like spells or powers they have, or, you know, biologically. So the Croach are a mix of trilobite beetles and squid, and also the rotting corpses of animals as well, because I remember in some of the early sketches, and I think I kept the detail in when I was drawing them in the comics, was they have like this kind of goat, kind of deer-like skull structure. But they have like almost like a Venus flytrap kind of jaw. It's quite jarring, but they have skeletal bony arms as well. And some people are not keen on skeletons either. So, you know, it's a lot of primal fears people have, things that are uncomfortable to look at. It's like my sister, she absolutely hates wasps and she does not like spiders. It's kind of funny because spiders become a central theme element in season 2 of Ask for Mercy as well. I mean, I don't mind spiders at all. I think they're absolutely fantastic, but they just, you know, if you're not harming that, if you're not harming a spider, it's not going to harm you. That's how I see it. So, you know. So, and to be honest, I think I watched a lot of horror films where they really play on very, it's like something, there's something very, very wrong in the shot. And it's like, it doesn't look right, but it's like that on purpose. It's like with like Hereditary and stuff, like, because it's the use of like long shot filming is quite inspiring because there's something off in the shot, even though you're looking at the characters. There's something in the background that just doesn't sit right, you know, and it's like incorporating elements of like that, of how you'd feel watching those things, that kind of inherent fear or unsettling, bringing that into how the monsters behave in the comic, how you engage or how your characters engage with that. So I remember this one sequence. It was a sequence we added in later on while making this, making the chapter. It was a one-page dream sequence where Mercy was waking up. Well, she thinks she was waking up, but it was like she was walking up to the mirror. And as she was walking up to the mirror, she saw her reflection, but there was a different reflection kind of coming towards her. I mean, I really enjoyed drawing that page. It's actually the crouch, like, appearing, but getting closer and closer. But it's such a creepy image because it's like, what is that? You know, that's quite frightening to think about. It's making them both really scary, but also making them look really cool at the same time. But also, they need to have some sort of grounded sense about them a little bit.
I think you touched on this earlier, but where do good collaborations come from? What's the recipe there?
Oh, man. Well, collaborating with Richard is like playing tennis or badminton. It's really, really fun and engaging to be able to bounce ideas back and forth to one another. And sometimes it can help us out creatively, especially if we get to a wall. I would send Richard sketches, perhaps something that I had in the past in mind. So I'll literally just quickly draw up like a layout of a page I thought about, or like a character design or something. And I'd send that to him and we'd end up talking about it, and vice versa. He'd sometimes send me material to look at and read through. He recently sent me a book about cyborgs and robots, the kind of postmodern mythology, and how, you know, in a postmodern age, and how that compares to the kind of mythologies that we already know, like, you know, Prometheus and, you know, the creation myths and legends and stuff like that. It's very interesting. It's like I'm never going to be able to watch Jaws again. the when I read the passage about Jaws that's in this book, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to be able to watch it in the same way again, because it's such an interesting read. And it gets me thinking about aspects of like our characters and stories that we want to tell in the future. It's really kind of nice to be able to sometimes sit down and just talk about where we could or even speculate about where these characters can go or what's in store. It's like, I remember saying at the very start of when we were doing season 3, and I was like, I just really want to see like the hybrid on York Minster. And it's just a case of, yeah, like Richard was all for that. And it was just a matter of how do we get there? How do we get to that point? And I remember it was the last time he was over here in the UK, and we sat in the conservatory. We spoke for about, must have been 2-3 hours. And he was there with his book and writing things down and talking about the characters, the story, speculating their backgrounds. And it's really fun. It's a really fun way to create comics, in my opinion. But it's something I'm not unfamiliar with, because I enjoyed, you know, it's like when you watch a TV show and it's like, if it's a long-running one and you just like, you're speculating or you're kind of almost fantasizing a little bit what these characters, you become that invested in them. You know, you kind of want to know more. You get talking and you can just go on and on and on for ages. And it's I'm not unfamiliar with that method, and it's quite nice that it's actually carried on into my comics work. And I know everyone kind of works differently, but I'm kind of hoping that when I work with other writers in the future, I hope to have that sort of bouncing kind of back and forth ideas like I have got with Richard. Because, I mean, he's even said himself that he works with me differently than he works with Axel. Like, there's different... It seems to be that work methods seem to change or they differ. But it'll be interesting to see what actually happens currently. I do love the way the collaborative kind of style we've got going at the moment. I have to admit, I really enjoy it, because it makes me want to know more about these characters. It's like, but what if they do this? What if they do that? It's when the characters have so much to tell, but you've not got enough room to it, like you've not got enough, like you've not got enough space. There's so much that they want to tell, because the characters have a mind of their own almost now. Like, there's so much story, but it's like we're struggling to like put it all in, or like try and get it all kind of, you know, there's so much to tell, and that's the best way, really. There's so much to tell.
That's awesome. So, Abigail, we are reaching the point in the show. We're almost done, but before we are, we've got a ton of fun questions. Are you ready for those?
Oh, gosh. Okay, then. Fire them.
All right. So, what's your favorite food?
Favorite food? Probably Marmite on a toasted bagel, and probably stir fry.
Excellent choices.
Yeah.
Nice. Would you say you're a cat person or a dog person?
Definitely cat person, because I have one currently sitting on my windowsill snoozing away, soaking up all the rays, because
nice,
she's just like that.
That's beautiful. What's the best swear word?
Yeah. Yes. My favorite swear word is bollocks, because it feels like No, seriously, bollocks is no, there's no word like bollocks. Absolutely not, because it's like you're literally treading on someone's foot, but also smacking them in the face at the same time. It's got that, you know, double hit, you know? I love it.
That's great. What inspires you?
What inspires me? Oh, gosh. Probably lots of horror films and copious amounts of tea.
Nice.
No, I am a self-confessed tea addict. This is quite known. I flipping love tea. I literally run on the stuff.
And you live in a place where you can get good tea. I have to have mine imported from England.
What one do you get? Which one do you get?
So the one I like so far is the Yorkshire Gold label. I don't like the red
label. Yes! Yeah, no, either way, it's Yorkshire tea. That's the best
one.
I drink that stuff. It's absolutely amazing. Seriously, the best. I am so... Oh, I love you even more now. Yes.
I had a friend turn me on to it last year, and there's nothing else like it. It is great. I
thank them for it because it's the best tea. Oh, my God. I love that stuff.
It'll wake you up in the morning. I have not had mine yet today.
Did you see the Sean Bean advert for it? Oh, you're missing out. It's like he just like walks in and he starts like doing this heroic monologue to the new interns, and it's like he just gets this flipping sword out and says, you know, do it for Yorkshire, like proper Game of Thrones, like.
Nice.
But it's Sean Bean. It's Sean Bean. And like, honestly, like, because I'm from Yorkshire, like I have friends down south, and literally all the Sean Bean jokes start happening like the moment I get past Peterborough. Like, that's literally just what happens. Like, it's like, oh God, like, because I sound northern to them. Like, even though I probably, to be honest, everyone I know up here don't think I sound that northern. It's kind of a weird paradox.
So what brings you joy?
What brings me joy? Drawing. Cuddles with my cat, Willow. And definitely my family. To be honest, my family should have actually been the first, but I just thought drawing because I love drawing. But yeah, family definitely comes first.
That's great. Okay, so if you could change one detail on planet about living on planet Earth, what would it be?
We need more trees. We need more trees and less concrete. And less plastic.
That would be great.
Yeah, definitely.
So you wake up one morning and you are imbued with superpowers. What are they? And what do you choose to use them for?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I think I actually have a superpower already. Though it's not really a superpower. I have this natural jump scaring ability where I just walk into a place where, like, oh, I just seem to have this stealth technology or stealth ability where I know I'm walking into the room, but for some reason no one else does. And then when they turn around, they're like, oh, you made me jump. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm right here.
That's amazing.
It happened at the pub. It happened last week with my dad. I walked into the kitchen and apparently I just made him jump. Because he was unloading the dishwasher and apparently I just made him jump. I do it to my grandma. Bless her heart. But yeah, if I had, apart from the natural jump scaring ability, if I had another power, it'd probably be able to bring the creatures that I make in my artwork to life, and a little bit like Sai from Naruto, like they kind of you know, they're made of ink and stuff, but they're just like, you know, combat pets sort of thing. But yeah, perhaps that, yeah. I like the idea of my artwork coming to life and being able to protect me. So that'd be awesome. Or fight for me. Yeah.
So what's the secret sauce? How do you make your comics stand out from the crowd?
Oh, God, I don't know. I just... That is actually a really hard question. I don't know. Maybe I just, like, I put my soul into the work, but I think when I draw, while I'm drawing, I'm thinking about how those characters are feeling as I'm drawing them, and almost that kind of, those emotions end up channeling into the actual artwork itself. Sometimes it's first-hand experience, sometimes it's what one has seen or kind of seen or felt from a distance, but, you know, felt nonetheless. And like I think it's asking yourself the questions about if you're wanting to show emotion, or even just down to facial features and stuff, and, you know, trying to add that bit of spice into it. I think channeling, or kind of, yeah, asking yourself those questions, almost makes you more familiar with the artwork you're creating on a almost personal level. So I'd probably say that. I mean, artwork for me is a emotional journey. So and probably a spiritual one as well. Though I'm quite a superstitious person, but yeah, I'd say that. I'd say, kind of the emotional connection and channeling that, I'd say, into the work. That's where the style sort of, for me, takes form, because I express, my style is a reflection, or my language of my emotions, I think. Yeah, I think that's the words.
So 100 years from now, NASA throws your entire creative output into a space capsule, launches it into deep space.
Oh, gosh.
And
okay.
Sometime later, an undefined period of time in deep space, aliens find it and consume it. What's their thought? Well, what do they think of you and your work?
Probably who hurt them, who hurt me, or like who what, or like, what the hell is this? Or like, they have been watching too many horror films. It's like, or like, yeah, probably been, you know, haunted. Yes, that person's haunted.
So what's next for Abigail Harding?
What's next for me? Oh, I don't know. I think there's a little bit more to tell with Ask for Mercy. But I have, I think I've got some nice little cover gigs coming up. And I've just been, over the last year or two, I've been developing a personal project that I kind of want to develop into a comic one day that involves basically witchcraft, Victorian kind of gothic horror, flipping rooks, ravens, crows, and flipping well-tailored men and women, and love and passion and loss and Rufusil. So yeah, that's just basically one of those kind of stories I want to tell, and I hope I get the chance to or be in a position to actually tell it one day. So it's just one of those kind of personal projects that I'm slowly trying to chip at to make into, well, you know, hopefully, you know, I really want to be proud of this. And yeah, it's yeah, I feel like it's just something that I, you know, it's a story I'd like, and I think needs, I feel a need to tell. So yeah, that's what's happening at the moment, really, and what's happening in the future.
Nice.
Pretty much.
Well, Abigail, I wanted to thank you again. This has been just a fabulous interview. I've had so much fun sitting here just listening to your thoughts.
Thank you, but thank you so much for having me, Eva. It's just, I probably talk, I rant, I get carried away. So I'm sorry if I kind of went off tangent a few times.
Oh my God, don't even worry about it. That's totally what this show's about.
No, it's been a lovely interview. It really has. Thank you so much.
So where can people find you online?
So you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. I have a Facebook page, and I also have a DeviantArt. I also have a portfolio, which I recently created, and I have a Big Cartel store for my original art, a Redbubble for my Rude Ravens, which I think you'd really love, Eva, and I have an imprint store as well.
And now, babies, it's time to close the show. I wanted to say thank you for listening, supporting us, and following us online. Our listeners are the best humans. We love them. Thank you. We got a donation this week from Travis Waters, who said, "Truly enjoy the podcast. It's nice to hear from all the creative people of the world. It's awesome sauce." Travis, you are amazing and sweet, and I can't thank you enough for your contribution. Titular Characters is a show about the things we love and the people that make them. It's produced and hosted by the adorable Eva Webb. That's me. Illustrations and animation prerequisites by Luxiva. Sound design this week by Eva Webb. Also me. Oh, did I mention? We're looking for a new sound technician and mixer. DM me at EvaIsAdorable on Twitter for details. Opening theme by Antonia Marquis. Closing theme by Mikey Flash of Speed Force Music. Special thanks to the ghost in the machine. You know who you are. And that's it, my sweet ones. Join us next time for another exciting adventure in cyberspace. Love, guys.